Welcome to the episode 22 of Island CT Podcast.
A podcast about science, nature, technology, and education. And we have two choices here.
We do.
We can do both. About blindness, or it's about reversing blindness.
Mm-hmm.
And then the viral...
Right.
Transinfection.
Right. Mm-hmm. I'm Kelly.
And I'm Patrick. And together we are the hosts of the Island CT Podcast.
Okay. So we are recording today, November 5th. And we hope to have the podcast up soon.
It'll be up on Sunday. I'm pretty
Probably
sure.
Probably on Sunday.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I said the same thing last time and it only went up... Yeah, yesterday.
Right.
But, well, we'll talk about that. But, yeah. Well, maybe that's part of the administrative stuff. So
right.
So maybe I can explain what happened.
Okay.
So I had it all done.
Yeah.
And then I started to think seriously about, well, this is going to be a lot more available than we've had it in the past. And I looked up copyright issues and stuff, and I realized you really like that. And I did, too. I mean, the original music we had was from I can't remember the group's name.
I know, I'm trying to... Dear.
It was Love Over Gold, the song. It was, I mean, it wasn't the song, it was the intro to it and the ending.
Mm-hmm.
Dire Straits.
Yeah, Dire Straits.
But then I looked up, and it seems like you really can't just pick a song for an intro and exit for a podcast, because if you can use it, but only if you're critiquing it or altering mm-hmm. it to make some kind of new and
right.
So all of the old ones will have to. So it took me a while to figure. Well, you looked up a bunch of them,
mm-hmm.
and
I did.
Let me look up our current website. The podcast, it was the one we finally picked, was by Martin DeBoer, and it was called Low Battery Blues, and we used snips from it at the start.
Right.
Yet, and it's, has a Creative Commons license,
mm-hmm.
so we're going to make everything we do Creative Commons, and so we could use it. And I gave on the website the link to the license and everything. So I hope it's all good.
It's one of those challenges that we want to do the right thing.
And yeah.
And we've tried to really investigate what that is.
Except really means just like in the short amount of time to get it out there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's the right way to go about it.
Right.
Oops. Oh, darn. Were you looking over? You saw. Okay, we'll discuss that later.
Mm-hmm.
That was supposed to be a surprise during the podcast.
Well, you didn't tell me not to look.
The new look for our website, which is not up yet. Anyway, so let me see. Administrative stuff. Yeah, so the podcast is finally up.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else?
None that I can think
really.
Of.
I because of this and working so hard to figure out what to do with this, I did not put up any older blog entries.
Right.
Or podcasts. So that'll come up next. I'll have
right.
to redo them. But definitely, you know, if I work at Island CT as much as I did this last week, we'll have a couple more entries up.
Right.
So because
we will.
Now it's just a question of streamlining it.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks for your podcast notes again.
Mm-hmm.
Helps to do that.
Yeah.
Go on to blog entries?
Sure. I don't have my blog entry. I know it's done.
But you didn't get it in my hands.
I didn't get it into your hands, but I will have it there.
Well, I only got the podcast up last night. So I don't know if I would have gotten it up.
Mm-hmm.
I might have. I don't know. Anyway, yeah. So I can't remember. What did you write it on?
See, that's the issue. I can't remember.
It's written, but you can't remember.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's
Well,
done.
Mine's not up until this Sunday.
Okay.
So maybe we'll just leave it.
Yeah.
So skip the blog entries for now.
Well,
I mean,
we'll
mine's written
those.
Also. Mine's about the Avatar Club.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
We'll talk about it more next time.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about it in past.
Right.
Podcasts, but they're not up yet. So.
Right.
Okay. So moving on to minor topics. I have a bunch of short little ones.
I do too.
Did you want to go first?
Sure. I found this really interesting article, and it's very short. It was in the news, so I assume that it will be up soon, like the article will come out in.
It's in the Science News?
Yes, Science News. Yeah. And usually it hits the news right before they have a published paper.
Uh-huh.
So the next week it will probably be in published form. So, a very interesting study. The scientists looked at different extinctions that occurred during the Ordovician, the Devonian, and the Triassic periods. And what's cool about it is that they noticed that there was a marked decrease in the amount of selenium. And they think that that actually caused the decline in organisms because of that.
So and I'm looking at the dates you have there, 443 million, 371 million,
mm-hmm.
200 million. So none of those are the dinosaurs.
No.
And then the one that I think is, you know, the ultimate extinction of life on Earth, isn't that 250 million years ago? So that's not that one either.
No.
So it's other, they're like smaller extinctions.
Yeah, they are.
440 million years, that's a long time.
So I guess they called them pre-extinction intervals.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And they found marked reduction in selenium, which is kind of an essential part of a certain enzymes and proteins that are used by a lot of organisms. And in particular, phytoplankton.
Hmm.
So it was interesting, and it's caused when we have low available oxygen in the atmosphere.
So when oxygen drops, the availability of selenium also decreases?
Yes, and and in those particular cases, they had less than 1% of what we have currently.
Wow, that's a huge difference.
Yeah. And so when I read it, it just caught my eye. And of course, we're covering geology right now. And we've been looking at extinction. And so it's neat that they're looking at selenium at concentrations. And they're thinking, wow, they may be the trigger that triggered by decreased oxygen. And it may actually slow the erosion of available selenium for organisms.
Hmm.
So I thought it was a neat connection. Very interesting. And
there's a lot of questions there about what causes what and what's a result of.
Right. So I'm really looking to see, you know, what will this.
When was the date of this? November 5th.
So November 5th. So this just came out.
Okay, so this might be coming up.
Yeah, that's what I said. So this will be coming out the next week. Cool. I'm looking forward to the follow-up article.
Well, there is a
very
new
little
science out, right, that
it.
I haven't even seen yet. That must have come out today because I was looking at science today and I didn't recognize the picture you had up just a few minutes ago.
Okay. So I will definitely be looking into it for the next podcast.
Okay.
It's something that I just thought was interesting. Okay, how about one of yours?
One of mine?
Mm-hmm.
Can I do two?
No. Yes, you can.
They're kind of related because they're both your stuff.
Oh, okay. Then you can do two.
So first, Kelly's new tablet/phone. I want to know everything about it. So far?
So I am not a phone person.
No.
I use a phone for emergencies. I text with our sons.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, you know, when there's a need, I use it, but it's I'm not one that has a phone glued to their hand or to their ear because they're talking to someone.
Sorry, I'm taking this down. I think I've been hitting it.
Yeah.
We have this lamp. Going to, so, I don't know if I'm making... Did it seem like there was a noise? Well, you wouldn't be able to tell, would you?
No.
I don't know how to get this off. Okay, we'll just leave it.
No, I don't.
We'll just leave it. I'll just put it out of the way.
Okay. So, anyway.
It's getting worse.
I know, I'm like, just okay. Give it up.
It's going to hit me in the head. So, yeah, your phone.
So, I decided that I was going to go for a small tablet, because really, I just use it for texting.
Did you decide this at the Backwoods Orienteering Club annual meeting?
No, I decided before. But I also wanted the GPS option for Patrick and I to go out in the field.
Yeah.
And so I read about this new tab, and I haven't gotten to test it out in the field, but I'm really looking forward to it because it does have a compass option, a GPS compass option, and I'm looking forward.
So this is a new tab, NEUTAB. What's right. The... Who makes this?
I think that's the name of the company, Pat.
Oh, it is the name of the company.
Yeah, that's the name of the company. So this is an off-brand. It's not, you
and it
know.
It runs Android.
It runs Android. And you just put in your phone card and you can use
your SIM
it.
Card.
Your SIM card, sorry. Yeah. Your SIM card. And you can use it as a phone.
You do remember what, just put it in was like?
That was a little crazy.
Yeah.
Okay. However, it has this cool thing that you can pop off the back and there's room for two SIM cards, which probably I will never use, but I think it's a neat option, especially if you're a person that goes to Europe or another country that you need to use two different SIM cards.
Yeah. Yep.
And it'll give you that option. So I like it. It's not meant for the hip.
I'm really excited to see.
But definitely.
So you have internet on it?
Yeah, so I have internet. I have full internet access when I want it. And I also have...
So I saw you fooling around with the mapping software on there.
Right.
Did you actually...
No, I haven't gotten to use it. That's why I said I'm looking forward to...
But you downloaded it.
I downloaded it. And I'm not sure if I downloaded the right stuff because I haven't tried it. So I'm downloading a bunch of things, and it really just arrived this week. So last night I was downloading as I was sitting in bed, and then I was like, I just need to go to bed and stop downloading.
So the other thing I wanted to ask about is the kids at the Makerspace. You had stories about them starting to code and being surprised by that.
So some... really nice surprises have happened at the Makerspace. So I think I've mentioned this in the other podcast that I have this father who wants to work with us, and he works at Google. And
with us, you mean Smith Middle School?
With Smith Middle School. Mm-hmm. And he wants to start programming with students. And after talking to him, he's like, well, I would be interested in using the VEX robots. And maybe we could work with having the students program the VEX robots. And it's one of those things, I'm just starting to work with someone. So I'm not sure if he understands what 8th grade students, kind of their mode of action.
We really need to get him in the class.
Yeah. I need to see him with kids because, you know, often I have people that really like to work with us, and they have this perception about what they can accomplish.
And then they show up.
And then they show up. And then the kids, you know, sometimes they're able to do incredible things, and they make connection after connection. And you just think, oh my goodness, there's no end to this. We could totally do this. Yeah. But then you realize there's pitfalls and there's, you know, kind of setbacks that you have to overcome to really accomplish that goal. So
you really have to be flexible.
You do. And you have to kind of move with the kids, especially in a club situation, because this is free time that they're giving up and they're coming in for fun to program at lunch. So I think that's pretty cool.
Yep.
Nice thing that I have been directed over to is Khan Academy. So Khan Academy is a free course. They offer free courses, and they offer free courses in computer programming. And the students have really liked that. And that has given them an opportunity to practice JavaScript. And they've been working through JavaScript on that, really enjoying it. And we've done that for, I guess last week is when we really started getting into it. The week before, I was trying to encourage people to go over to the site, and I only got a few people to go over. And then we've also been working with code.org for students that are doing more entry-level programming. So it's more of a blocky code.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're using the blocky code to, you know, make things move or run a very simple game. And
I wish I'd been there to see that.
Yeah, the students have really enjoyed it. And I've also told the kids that I'm writing a grant, and I had them help me with ideas for what we could do with Spheros as a way of also encouraging them more into the programming at more of an entry level than the VEX computers. So the short of it is the kids are really investing time. And yesterday I had a student come up to me and tell me about this whole coding competition for girls that she's really interested in. And although I didn't get the details of it, I know that at our next meeting, she'll be sharing that with me, and I'll be sharing it on our podcast as well. So it's neat. Definitely student-driven.
That's what's really cool.
Yeah, and I'm also trying to keep that, you know, ignited so that they're wanting to go on and they see something that's coming.
Yep.
And one student talked to me the whole lunch about ways we could use the Spheros and maybe, you know, to encourage people to give us grant money to buy them.
Yep.
So that was nice. And hopefully I will be putting the grant in the next week, the Biogen Ignite STEM grant. And we're hoping to have some Spheros in February.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. So nice stuff.
So no, your stuff.
My stuff. Okay.
Minor stuff still.
Minor stuff. So I found another article that I thought was pretty cool. And it's one that you mentioned to me last week, but I think you forgot about. So they...
is that the steroid?
Steroid eye drops.
Well, I'm looking at your thing, but I don't remember it at all.
Oh, really? You mentioned this to me last week. So
really?
You're like, wow, I just heard in the news...
Uh-huh.
That they now have steroid eye drops that have reversed cataracts in mice. So
yeah.
It's not used with humans yet. We're still quite a few steps back from
this.
That.
Yes, yes.
So it's pretty interesting. So they have done these studies, and they have developed a steroid that reverses the cataracts, and it's an eye drop treatment. So the way they wrote the article, it suggests that the eye drop treatment would be much cheaper than surgery. And
yeah, sure.
There's several people that go without surgery for so long because it's such an expensive proposition to get eye surgery and to have cataract surgery done. So very interesting stuff. It's also interesting that they have had, in this particular news article, they talk about mice, and they've also done similar work with dogs using slightly different techniques where they not only used eye drop therapy of the steroids, but they also injected it into the eye, and they had very good success rate. So interesting stuff. I'm looking for the full article. This is just another news blurb in Science.
Uh-huh.
So they just kind of give you the overview, And I really want to see.
Can't wait for.
Yeah, I'm waiting for the more in depth.
I was about to say I can't wait for the main vision article we're going to talk about today. That one was really cool.
Yeah, and I think because we're doing the vision article today, it was just really interesting to see.
Sure.
The current study by Gritstwicki, they hope to launch clinical trials in the next year. A tech company has already holds the license in California for launching the animal study soon.
Cool.
So very interesting stuff. I really hope great success for them because that will change lives for many. So that was my short.
Okay.
Do you have another short one?
I have several. So this has to do, this is introspective.
Mm-hmm.
It has to do about our website.
Okay.
So I was loading up our stuff and going to cPanel, mm-hmm. which, have you seen? It looks kind of like this. Because you did WordPress stuff. I don't know
right.
if you did cPanel stuff. Anyway, that's our cPanel.
Right.
At GoDaddy. And then there's this thing. I don't have it on here. I just took a screenshot. But you can go into statistics about your site and everything. And one of the things I looked up was, check this out. So we did it in October.
Right.
This is like the number of unique visitors.
Yeah.
14. Yay.
Yay.
So this was in November. Let me see. Unique visitors. 50 in October. I'm sure they're mostly bots.
Yeah.
And then I looked at, you can get it by country.
Yeah.
So United States is real big. We have a few in Israel, Brazil, Canada, Romania, Malaysia. Malaysia's smaller, and then Honduras, Argentina, and Estonia. Anyway.
It looks like our orienteering crew.
I know.
Anyway, how much fun is that?
I'm not sure. I wish there was a way to tell which ones of these hits were actually people physically clicking on it
mm-hmm.
and bots going around for different reasons, maybe
right.
lists of what's out there and everything.
Interesting.
So I thought that was kind of fun. The other thing, which you kind of saw, is you keep telling me that our website looks like crap.
I did not use those words.
No. Was it harsher than that? I can't remember. So I'm showing you now. You saw I'm working on making, it's a layout,
mm-hmm.
and I'm using CSS, whatever, and when I move the page, I have a top section,
very
left,
nice.
Right, and the bottom, and then I went on from that, and I
put
a picture at the top like you wanted,
mm-hmm.
it says Island CT, so this is not on our website yet, but something similar will be.
You're going to see an awesome cover page to what's up there now.
Yeah. I'll try to get this up with the next podcast.
Mm-hmm. It looks
right
beautiful.
After. And so we'll have a picture at the top. It'll say Island CT in the center. On the left, there'll be some links.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the right, the main body. And then I'll put our creative column and stuff at the very bottom.
Nice.
Like this. And yeah, so it wasn't too difficult, and I don't know, I'm thinking I might not need to learn much coding to do it, because I just did it sitting here after I was done reading the articles we're going to review tonight.
Oh, very nice.
It went that fast. So,
nice.
Cool. Just, you know, downloading stuff from the web and then altering it for
mm-hmm.
the way you want it.
Great.
Oh, one other thing, which is really cool. When I went onto cPanel, one of the sections is like raw data or something, and you
mm-hmm.
go into there and you download a zipped file of your logs.
Mm-hmm.
And so here's one of them, and I unzipped it November 2015. And this looks, you remember when we had Island CT on our home server
mm-hmm.
going out? and it was running through Apache. And doesn't this look like the Apache log file?
Yeah,
it's
it does.
Similar, right? So it has all of this stuff about who was connecting from what IP address, and it's in this raw format. So I think this is, because, you know, I looked at that cPanel, I'm clicking on stuff, and they have graphs, and I'm like, yeah, that's fast and stuff, but if I ever want to know anything that's specific, it's not there, right? The chances are it's not going to be there. But if I have this raw data, so I was really psyched with this.
Neat.
I don't know what to do with it yet or how to access it. But
it's anyway. Data.
But it's data. So that's kind of cool. That's my small stuff having to do. Do you have any other small stuff?
I do.
Okay.
So
let's switch because mine is now a different kind of small stuff after
this. This does change it quite a bit.
Yep.
So it's moving from technology back to Ebola, because we usually do a disease component, even though we don't necessarily focus on it.
We haven't tried.
There's just things that's popped up that have caught our interest. And I actually meant to talk about this last time, but it was put on the back burner. And again, Ebola, there's an article about Ebola. And this time, it's talking about how long the Ebola can hide in semen. And it's pretty crazy that the Ebola...
Didn't we talk about this a little bit?
Did
you talk before the podcast? I don't remember.
I think I talked before the podcast. I'm not sure if it was actually mentioned. And earlier we talked about an article that mentioned, wow, we think it will be in the semen of men for a much longer time, up to like 3 months. And now they found it's like 7 to 9 months. So quite a length of time after the initial infection.
Yeah.
And so I just thought that was very interesting. And it's one of those things that will also make it challenging, because these are going to be healthy individuals that are out in the community.
And carriers. And carriers.
But, you know, it will be one of those issues that will make the control of the virus much more challenging.
Sure.
So I just thought it was of interest and something to share.
And you're hitting the science hard for your shorts.
Yeah.
You usually do, actually.
I really enjoy some of the articles that I hit. Well, actually, I've been hitting geology a lot, too. Okay.
My turn?
Your turn.
Okay. I am so excited for this next thing.
Okay.
I don't know if we mentioned in the last one, we might have, about the small USB microscope we got.
Oh, yes. No, we did not.
We didn't? So but we got a small USB microscope.
Yes.
It has LED lights and stuff. And it's mostly for working on soldering stuff, because we have, we're trying to do a breakout board for the SI5351. And actually, the Oshpark boards for that should be coming...
this weekend.
Yeah, it should be here this weekend. I'm hoping.
I think it might be.
So that'll be the first time we saw something that small. But that's not what I was so excited about. So one thing that's always a chore is you have... and then there's that word. Is it a pantograph?
Yes.
Is that what it is, really?
Yes, I think
Better
you're right.
Google
Let me.
It.
You'll
handle that?
Yeah, okay. I'm doing it right now.
So I'll keep talking about this. So... the problem is, you design, if you want something, P-A-N?
Just wait.
Oh, there
pentograph.
It is. Pantograph. Okay. So, the problem is, you want to cut some copper, you want something like a printed circuit board, but you want it right away, because... this is just a prototype, and you're working at it, and so you design it on a piece of graph paper, and then you have to transfer it to a piece of copper, and then cut the copper. And transferring it is a real pain, because if you have an entire IC on there, you want it to be pretty precise.
Right.
And So how do you do it? And pantograph, P-A-N-T-O-G-R-A-F, is one of those contraptions where you have several rulers connected together by hinges, and you have a fixed point you attach to your table, for example, and then you set up the hinges with a particular spots, mm-hmm. so that when you take one, like a pin or something or a pencil, mm-hmm. at one hinge and you trace the design you drew, then a pencil at another hinge retraces that exact design on another piece of paper, and usually it's to increase the size of the picture.
Right.
Or you could decrease it, right? For our case, we'd want to just do it one-to-one.
Mm-hmm.
But what I found with the USB microscope, which was really cool, was this. So I make my... normally the way you do it, just replicate something onto paper, is what I've done in the past, is you put the paper and you tape it to a window with light from behind.
Mm-hmm.
And then you put the paper you want to replicate the stuff on, and you just trace it,
mm-hmm.
right? But you can't do that with copper, because copper's for a PCB is going to be totally opaque.
Right.
So I took the USB microscope, and I took the graph paper where I had drawn the circuit,
mm-hmm.
and I put that under, let me see, what did I do? I took a picture of it. That's right, yeah. I took a picture of it. And then I brought up that picture. No, is that what I did? You can do that, but that's not what I did. I'd made the drawing on the computer. I think I used GIMP. So I made a drawing of the circuit. Actually, it wasn't even a circuit. It was a design, right? And I made the background transparent. And then I installed, I can't remember the name of the program. I think it's KIV, K-I-V or something. Anyway, all this is going to go into a blog entry.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be out there. Not this one, but the one after.
Right.
I wrote up most of it. It's, mm-hmm. it's fairly well written, but I need to get pictures and stuff. But basically, if you have, so I was using Debian 8,
mm-hmm.
and I found out that if you have compositing turned on, and I'll explain how to do that in the blog,
mm-hmm.
Because this is the first time I've ever done anything like this.
Right.
Then using KIV or whatever it was called, that image displayer, you can make it that transparent parts on the image are transparent on the desktop.
Right.
In other words, you can see your desktop and any windows behind the image through the transparent layers. So I have Camoso, which is my webcam software,
mm-hmm.
and this USB microscope is just so easy to work with anything. It just acts like a webcam. So
right.
I turned on the USB microscope with that. I put a piece of paper underneath the microscope, and then, and I turned it on so that I could see what was happening on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And then I took the image with that transparency setting and moved it over so it was on top of the image of the microscope.
Right.
On the screen. And then I took a pencil, a physical pencil, onto the physical paper under the microscope, and looking at the screen, I started to trace
mm-hmm.
the image. And it worked perfectly.
Yeah, that was very cool.
So you could by hand draw something, or you could do it on computer, doesn't mm-hmm. matter. You could scale it in GIMP or something.
Right.
And if you pick your colors right, like if you have blue and white graph paper,
mm-hmm.
you could take blue and white and turn that transparent.
Right.
And then keep your black tracing non-transparent,
mm-hmm.
so that you could see through that, and then slide a piece of copper underneath the microscope and trace right onto that. So
that was very cool.
Yeah, that's really cool. So I'm going to mm-hmm. do that.
So back to the microscope, just yep. so people know, is it a plug and play?
Pretty much. I just plugged it into a USB. I'll put what brand it is.
Okay. Did you have problems with it with your laptop?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't remember.
For some reason, I thought you had a problem with one.
It worked with both the laptop and the...
Okay. I'm just questioning. I didn't have time to mess around with it.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to make sure that it was compatible. That's all. Patrick uses Ubuntu?
No.
No?
Not for years. No.
Okay. So what are you using right now?
Debian.
Debian, sorry.
I use Debian with the XFCE desktop.
Okay.
Which is faster.
On your laptop?
On the laptop and on our main computer.
Okay.
I mean, there's no point to it on the main computer, but I'm used to it.
Okay.
And I like a lot of it.
No, that's fine. I just wanted to, I thought we should mention the system.
Yeah.
And maybe this week I will plug it into my Windows-based computer to see if it's a plug-and-play with that, too.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
It probably is, but it just allows people to have the flexibility to whatever they might have. Okay.
Do you have more shorts?
I do not. I'm done with my shorts.
I have 2-3 more, but they're even faster.
Okay.
I don't have anything from Linux Voice this time. I've read some stuff, but there's nothing big that I wanted to talk about. I have gotten LT Spice, which is the electronics simulator.
Mm-hmm.
I've gotten LT Spice working again on, well, not again. I have it working on the laptop and on a bunch of computers, but our new main computer in the living room didn't have it, so I got that working again using Wine, which is basically LT Spice is a Windows program.
Okay.
So and that works really well, and it was pretty easy to get going.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be using that because we've had so many problems with the driver and the whole power chain for our transmitter for 80 meters. And we'll get back to that in future plans. And while I was fiddling with Wine, I installed Notepad 2, which is not the second version of Notepad. It's a totally different program. And I remember at work on Windows computers where I have to work on Windows computers that any text stuff, I really like Notepad 2.
Mm-hmm.
So I downloaded it and I'll give it to you because you've been needing a nice... Remember
I'm starting to try to program a bit and test things so that when I'm working with the kids, I have a little insight.
And we were working on Word. JavaScript.
JavaScript. Together, yeah. And we were putting it over into a Word.
And then saving us text.
It was messed
funky
up.
Stuff.
So then we had to open up just a
so Notepad 2 is super
Notepad.
Simple.
Okay.
But it's a hell of a lot nicer than Notepad.
Great. I'm looking forward to it.
And then the last thing of my shorts is I got the Pandemic board game out.
Yeah.
Because we want to play that over Christmas. And I just have to say, I love that game.
Yeah. We're going to play it over Thanksgiving too. Basically, we have found a way.
Oh, yeah. The kids will be here for Thanksgiving.
So, you know, it's one of those things. And I think we should share it because we have a 24-year-old who has a girlfriend, and it's hard to find things that you can just do and hang out with them for a while without it taking over the evening. So
it's a fast game.
It is. It's a fast game. So we've chose fast games. Mm-hmm. And do you remember the YouTube channel that we watch? Where the guy...
Oh, the guy from Star Trek.
Yes, he reviews board games. And actually, that's how we found out about all of our board games, so we should give him a shout-out.
Will Wheaton.
Will Wheaton. I'll find
his... He played one of the kid on the new Next Generation Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
And you know he did a reading for one of Cory Doctorow's books? Yeah, there it is, Will Wheaton.
Yeah, I'm just looking for his YouTube.
Oh, with the YouTube.
YouTube board games, but that's not what it's called. Tabletop.
Is that what it's called? Tabletop?
Yeah. So he has this tabletop YouTube channel, and you can go to it, and he will showcase games, and he usually plays them with celebrity friends and that. And it's fun.
It's a
lot of fun. And that's the way we found out about good board games and, you know, the having them in a time frame.
Well, Pandemic I found out about earlier.
Did you?
The Pandemic really caught my eye because it's a cooperative game, and yet it's still really exciting. And,
right.
And there's just something really neat about a cooperative game.
Right.
Right. It's hard to make a game that
it is.
Gets everybody sucked in, but everybody's on the same side.
Right.
And yet it's not a computer game, right? Where it's a lot easier to create a problem and allow several people to, oh, no, are we on? Oh, that's what you told me I'm not supposed to say. Got it. Yes. Okay. Sorry, everybody. Kelly's getting ready for the next podcast already. And she changes the notes as she goes to save for the next one. And I'm always looking over at your notes, Kelly, to see...
to see that so, I'm on the right path.
No. So you have stuff that you're talking about that I don't have on here, and I haven't seen, like, the steroid in the eye. So as you talk...
You look over to see what's coming next.
I look over to see, you know, what you're talking about. It helps. That is all I have for the shorts.
Okay.
And... Time is, as usual, we're going to go over, I think. Maybe not. So we have a lot of future plan stuff. I don't know if you realize this. But okay, so the long stuff?
The long stuff.
Which one do you want to hit first?
I would like Out of the Darkness.
Okay, so that's the eye surgery and eye care in India.
Right. So Patrick came home one day, and he's like, wow, I just read this great article in Science. And
I really...
You will love it, Kelly. It's about cataract surgery and how they've done cataract surgery on children. And maybe you can fill us in on the rest.
So the background is... I can't remember the guy's name...
Oh, I have it right here.
He was at MIT. He's from India.
Yeah.
Neuroscientist. Pawan Sinha. Sinha. And he went back to India and he saw there were a lot of blind people. And I don't know, we shouldn't go into too much depth about his experience there because it will take forever to get through all of this article if we hit all the details. But the upshot is he decided to start this project to help blind people in India. And this is not just cataracts, and it's not just involving surgery. But he started this project, and it's called Project Prakash. In 2004 it began, I think. And the project was to help children by providing them with all sorts of either non-surgical or surgical treatment. And the surgical treatment is what we got really interested in.
Yeah.
And the reason is that it combines, on the one hand, really helping a need.
Right.
They say there's like, the estimates are all over the place for how many blind people are in India, but it's like...
Right.
The article here says 360,000 to 1.2 million.
Right.
And so there's a big need. But the real fascinating part on the science side, which the humanitarian side is also really incredible, but on the science side, it's that there's been this long-held belief, not a belief that's was brought about just by theory. There was experiments supporting this, that early in childhood development, the exposure of the brain to signals from the eyes as the child sees things is important for the brain's visual development.
Right.
And that after a certain age, if this stimulus hasn't occurred, the kid will be blind for the rest of his life, mm-hmm. even if you correct the problem with the eyes.
Right.
Because, and this was, this came from experiments done with cats and
right.
dogs?
I dogs. Think,
maybe monkeys
no,
also?
It, or monkeys, sorry. You're right, cats and monkeys. I just had
And two people got the Nobel Prize for it. Was that 1980s?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was.
Can't remember.
So it's fairly recent that they've received
1991. Mm-hmm. Trostan Weasel and David Hubble, H-U-B-E-L. Yeah, and I remember when we were taking psychiatry, this story mm-hmm. about cats, they're born blind.
Right.
And if they're kept in this situation where their heads are held, and they have only vertical lines.
Right.
Then later on they'll walk around and they'll keep hitting chair mm-hmm. legs.
Oh,
but
yeah.
But they can jump up on a chair.
Right.
But if they're held with their heads for a few weeks, or maybe it's a few days, I don't know, seeing only vertical lines, they can navigate a kitchen no problem walking around. They won't bump into the chair legs. But when they go to hop up on a chair, they'll just totally miss every time.
Did you say 1981?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
sorry.
I was looking at the same paragraph.
Here. Okay.
So, but it looks, you know, obviously we can't do experiments on humans mm-hmm. to see how that happens, but there was a lot of evidence that showed that, you know, the similar type of situation happened in humans. Mm-hmm. But there was also some evidence that this guy, Pawan Sinha, homed in on that seemed to say maybe it's not as clear-cut. And so in Project Prakash, they decided to take the children that needed surgery and for which there was a clear record that they had mm-hmm. been blind since birth.
Right.
And congenital cataracts is a... You know, there's going to be a lot of kids in India that have that. And 500 children in, I think, I don't know by what time this happened, but 500 children underwent cataract operations.
Mm-hmm.
And half of those, they were convinced, so that's 250 kids, they were convinced had been blind from birth.
Right.
And so they entered this special study.
Mm-hmm.
And what they found is that the kids could then recover their vision after the cataract surgery.
Right.
And not only that, but because of this sudden ability to see after not having seen for so long, we get to learn all sorts of stuff about how the brain functions through visual stimulus.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that was really cool is some of the kids... They did the surgery, and then they showed them some visual illusions. And the Ponzo illusion is the one where you have horizontal lines mm-hmm. and you have them overlaid onto an image that looks like train tracks going
right.
into the distance. And the horizontal lines are the same length, but it looks like the one that's the upper one looks longer because
right.
it looks like it's in the distance.
Mm-hmm.
And one thought was like, well, we're so used to seeing 3D stuff. We see this flat image, and we interpret it as three-dimensional. And so the one in the back looks like it's further away, and since it's the same length, we think it's actually longer.
Right.
Well, these kids, they never had any vision before, and within, I don't know how long, like I think they do this test the day after the surgery, at that point, they can't even tell the difference between someone's face and the picture of
and
someone's face.
And a picture of someone's
right?
face,
their,
yep.
The brain just cannot...
Distinguish, yeah.
...understand all of this information they're getting.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of it comes back within a month or so, but mm-hmm. at that point, they are absolutely... They have no idea what they're seeing. But already, when they're asked about length of this versus this, they have the same illusion we have.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like it's hardwired. It's not mm-hmm. through experience. So that's really interesting.
Right.
And the article talks about all sorts of other stuff that, especially the functional MRI studies.
Right.
Is really fascinating.
It is. And I also like the fact, or I find it very interesting, that at first they have a difficult time just distinguishing all of the cues that are coming at them visually. And then over a year, they with the experience, they're able to really fine-tune their vision down, yeah. where they distinguish faces. And I thought it was interesting where they said texture
mm-hmm.
and vision.
That
changes very quickly.
Yeah.
And much quicker than the others. And, you know, I think it's because you have that tactile component to what you're seeing.
Yeah, I didn't totally understand what the...
Or at least that's what I jumped to.
There was some interesting stuff about auditory mm-hmm. and texture sensing
mm-hmm.
And its relationship to vision, which I didn't totally understand.
Right.
Except it looks like the people that are blind started to use a large part of their visual cortex
right.
for auditory.
Here it is right here.
Sensing.
Mm-hmm. And then it changed back over yeah. to being taken over by visual over time.
Yeah.
Which I thought right. was neat. It looked yeah. very close to
Although
what...
I think it never goes totally back. I mean, it's fantastic. So one of the basic example is this kid from India that had been totally blind and had the cataract surgery, and then mm-hmm. a year later he's riding his bicycle down the street.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That is something that is just absolutely fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But with glasses he can read headlines on newspapers, but even with glasses he has trouble with the fine print.
Mm-hmm.
On a newspaper. So that's a pretty serious visual impairment, even though this is a year down the line. So
yeah,
his life has gone from being basically horrible in terms of blindness all the way to living a normal existence compared mm-hmm. to other people, right? But having really bad eyesight.
Right.
But it's really not perfect eyesight.
Right.
There are definitely some serious problems still.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway.
But so. Very interesting.
Yeah.
And
did you see the part of that about what they call contrast sensitivity?
Yeah.
That was interesting.
It was.
Let me try to remember. I think it's if you give someone different shapes
mm-hmm.
and you have the light level being extremely low or the mm-hmm. contrast being low. So the shapes, you know, like you look at a white background in low mm-hmm. light and the shapes are very light gray,
mm-hmm.
then people can't really, you know, normal people can distinguish, and you increase the contrast slowly and then suddenly you get to a threshold
mm-hmm.
and people don't have any problems with any of the shapes.
Right.
With the kids that were blind and then had the surgery and returned and their eyesight returned.
Here it is.
They get better, but they never get so that they distinguish the shapes really well.
Right.
They need a very high contrast.
Right.
And they need the shapes to be bigger. That's what right. it is. Once you get so you can distinguish the shapes as a normally sighted person, then it doesn't matter the size of the shape. While with them, when you increase the contrast and suddenly they can tell the size, the difference between different shapes of a large size.
Right.
Ones that are smaller, they still can't.
Right.
So it's a little bit like they need to use up a larger part of their cortex to see a certain shape.
Right.
It's less fine-grained.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There was something else that was really interesting about the MRI. I can't remember what it was. Oh, the spatial imagery thing.
Right.
That's really cool. It sounds like we use our visual cortex to remember where things are.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, it's not just, oh, this was in such and such a drawer. It's like, we actually image it to remember mm-hmm. Once you add a lot of stuff, we need the image.
Right.
And that ability in them comes back roaring when they get their eyesight back. It's suddenly, they can see the world and they can remember where many more things are than before.
Mm-hmm.
Still never, not as good as us when they, you know, after a long time, but that seems to be like, you know, you think, wow, a person that's blind gets to learn other senses and stuff, and remembering where things are should not be necessarily connected, but it really
right.
is. They have a very difficult time compared to us. So that was really an interesting one.
It's just interesting how the vision, that they can get back their vision, and then what the limitations of their vision is.
Yeah.
And then they aren't really sure if these are total limitations or with training that a lot of it can't be overcome.
Right.
It's like a lack of experience in being a visual person.
Yep, yep.
So, wonderful article. Very exciting. The actual town that they're doing the outreach in India has one of the highest populations of blind children. So it's in the world, actually. So that's amazing. And it's in Sanskrit, India.
We should say where this was published. This is out of Science.
Mm-hmm.
What issue is that? Page 372, issue 6259, volume 350. So it's the October 23rd
mm-hmm.
for this year, 2015. And it was like, I think it was a news article.
We were actually going to talk about it Feature. In our last uh-huh. podcast.
Were we?
But we did not get to it. Never it was one of our...
I'm happy because I hadn't read it as fully as I did this time.
Right, right.
So. Anyway.
Excellent article.
Yeah, that is ultra cool.
Okay.
Our other big one?
Yeah.
Not as big.
It's not as big. And I have to say, I read it, and I'm a little challenged by it, but it's very interesting.
Do you want to start that one off?
Sure. So it's called Visualizing Transinfections. It's by Thomas J. Hope, and it's published in the November 5th, 2015.
I have October 30th.
Oh, okay. It's the same.
Oh, no. This is your when you download it.
Oh, sorry. That's my download date. Yeah. Let me look at the bottom.
Up one.
There we go. So it is from the October 30th issue, and it is volume 350, issue 6260, page 511.
Yep.
And it's under virology.
Yeah. So this is a perspective.
It is.
And there's an... In the same issue, there's an original research article, which is really cool also,
mm-hmm.
although I've only had just a glimpse at it because we ran out of time, and that's just to give, it's by Seewald et al., and it's on page 563. So
what they do is they use intravitreal imaging, and...
Oh, where do you see that? Intra...
Is that how you use?
Where is that?
Right here.
Intravital.
Oh, vital, sorry. Intravital imaging. And it's a technique that shows at a cellular level how materials are moving through an organism or a tissue sample. And what they did is they injected mouse leukemia virus into the mouse, the particles, and then into the foot pad. And then they looked to see how the virions were being transported within the mouse.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I think they also had a humanized mouse, and they injected HIV into the foot pad.
Yeah.
They did both.
Yeah, they did both. Yeah.
Although the main focus of the article was the MLV, the mouse leukemia virus.
So, basically, they observed how it was...
I think the point is to see how does, not what happens in the long term, but how does an infection start?
Right.
You inject it in the foot pad, where does it go? Because the viruses need to get to very specific cells. For MLV, it's a very rare type of B cell. Where is that? B1A cells. So they're going to be in the lymph nodes. And for HIV, it's the T cells.
Right.
And a lot of those are in the lymph nodes too. So how does, you know, you get a cut or something, virus gets into the bloodstream, how does it get to those cells, which are not going to be there at the cut? Was what they were trying to address.
So they talk about the MLV particles are captured by macrophages. And sequestered within folds of the membrane.
That's the what they call the transinfection.
Right.
I've never heard of that before.
Either have
I. It's really a cool mechanism.
It is. And then the virions then can pass on to a rare set of B cells.
Yeah. Those are the B.
And these are the target of MLV, like you were mentioning.
Yeah. Because I think if MLV makes it into other cells, its chance of surviving is pretty low.
Right.
I'm not certain about that, but it does a lot better if it gets into a B1A cell. You know, it's adapted specifically for that cell type
right.
to do well in it. Yeah, because so I maybe a little bit of background about what's the point there.
Right.
It's that, you know, when they did this article, they injected a lot of virus because they wanted to be able to see what was happening. But normally, you figure, if you're being infected by a virus, you're going to be exposed a lot of times by very few of the virus particles. And you have macrophages. They're all over the place, right, to protect you. And usually, what macrophages do is they engulf viruses and other things. Rip them apart, you know, they send them to the lysosome, I guess, and takes parts of them that are cut up and put it on the surface, and they migrate to the lymph node where you have all your B cells hanging out.
Right.
And then they present, is the correct terminology, these fragments to different B cells, and the B cells that has the matching antibody gets turned on.
Right.
And so one of the two modes of transmission that the virus is using, in this case, it's this transinfection. It inhibits the macrophage from engulfing it, so that the macrophage kind of starts engulfing it, but then it stops and it holds on to the virus, and then it crawls up carrying the virus outside itself.
Right.
And then tries to present it, and it's presented one B cell after another until finally it gets to that B1A.
Right.
And that matches the receptors that the virus has, and the B1A engulfs it and gets infected. While if the virus had been engulfed by the macrophage, it probably would have been destroyed.
Right.
Before it got to the
And that's the difference with having the transinfection, is that it's more efficient than free-floating viral particles.
Right.
And so that's the...
Although there's another mode. What do they call the other mode? It's not the only way to get...
Well, when they look at it evolutionarily, they say, wow, this maximizes the efficiency of taking advantage of the host anatomy.
Right.
At a cellular level. So it, you know, it's just bizarre to think of what changes occur in terms of evolution for a viral attack or, you know.
Cell-cell transmission.
Yeah.
So it also uses this different mode called cell-cell transmission.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also more efficient than free-floating.
Right.
So it's not the only system. Yeah. Anyway, there's a lot more in this article.
Oh, there's so much more. And we're just really touching the surface of it.
Yeah.
But
But I'm thinking we did a good job with the I article.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping to cut it a little bit. We're always going over an hour.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've accepted that.
Yes, we're trying that's not true. To.
But we're a little bit over an hour now. Maybe we'll cut this one out just to say that there's a lot more to this article.
There's much more.
The research,
and
the original research one.
We'll probably be hearing a lot more about it as they start to.
Yeah. Especially involving what are the receptors?
Yes.
CD169 for the MLV, and there's a whole story involving dendritic cells and the DC-sign receptor for HIV, which there's a whole story there and why HIV does not use the cell-cell transmission.
Right.
Compared to MLV, and the difference between what they call an infectious synapse and a virological synapse. Anyway, all sorts of cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll call it there.
Yep.
Obviously, I want to keep talking about it.
I know, me too. But
let's move on, because we have a lot to talk about what's coming up.
We do. So now I know that I'm married to a celebrity.
I'm a celebrity.
You are. So, Patrick, we were just pleasantly surprised. He's on the cover of Amateur Radio, the CQ magazine, and he is featured running in an ARDIF event that he just participated in August.
That was the Colorado one.
It was the Colorado one, so very exciting. And
CQ sent me three magazines in the mail.
Yeah, which was very sweet.
It was cool.
And it's their November issue for 2015.
Yeah.
So very nice. And
Joe Moe wrote the article.
Yeah.
So it's kind of fun having your picture. I've never had my picture on the front of a magazine before.
No, it's a full cover magazine picture, which is incredible. You know, usually the little blurb in the paper is what we cut out. So really nice stuff and fun to see that something you're passionate about, you know.
I wish I'd won a medal. So many people won medals.
I know. But, you know, everyone there obviously has a passion for the radio sport. Okay.
Let's see. So we did our long one. So it's all future stuff now.
Yeah. So one of the things Patrick bought this week was the Windows, a new Windows.
Oh, we got a new Windows operating system. So I'll probably blog about that sometime.
Okay.
But that's definitely in future plans. Maybe next this week coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even this weekend, I'm going to try to get that going in VirtualBox.
Mm-hmm.
So I have several VirtualBox operating systems running. I know I have a Fedora 20 at the lab, and it's an older computer, and that's a total fail. The computer doesn't have the resources to run something like Fedora and the original system. But I've run sleeker ones on computers without tons of memory, and it's worked fairly well. our new computer has a lot of power in the living room, so I think I'll probably try it there. And then if that works, we also purchased a small laptop drive.
Right.
And we have a Windows laptop, which is basically not being used.
No.
It's just sitting there in case. So I think I'm going to pull the drive from that one if the Windows VirtualBox works fairly well.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll still have it. And then I'm going to put the other drive in there and turn it into a Linux box again.
Mm-hmm.
So because my laptop's getting pretty old. So that's going to come up in the next couple of weeks, and it'll be blogged about probably
right.
a while after that.
And we'll probably mention it in the podcast
definitely
as well.
Definitely by the next podcast, we'll have some information.
Mm-hmm.
Just thought of something else.
Also, I want to get the GPS going. Patrick and I will be planning another OMEET or orienteering meet at Falls Lake.
Yep. So we just had the BOK, Backwoods Orienteering Club, annual meeting
we were
just at. And looks like in March 2016,
mm-hmm.
we'll be running an event again. So
very exciting.
Yep.
And with the GPS, it will give us a little more security, hopefully.
Yeah,
we
need to try that out.
That was one of the reasons that I thought I would switch over. Also, the letters on my phone had worn off because my phone was so old,
mm-hmm.
so I could no longer figure out what letters I was hitting while it was texting to the kids.
So now's another thing to bring up in future plans, which matches
uh-huh.
this. I downloaded Open Orienteering Mapper.
Oh, nice.
So
that's what I was going to do this weekend.
Yeah, so you'll have to help me with that. Because you've done most of the OCAD and CONDIS work in our last OMEET. And I still can't figure out what the point of those two are. I mean, I haven't worked with them practically at all.
Well, the hard thing is that I really haven't worked with them enough other than to get a map up and going for the thing.
It's really cool that BOK is thinking of going in that direction.
Oh, I know.
So it makes me want to jump on it and get some experience.
Yeah, I wrote it down and I was like, okay, I'll try to download that and start messing around with it. Especially hearing many of them said that the Open Orienteering was a good program and that it could import street maps, which was impressive as your base map.
Yep. So that's all interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see. Let's keep with the same general topic. We have an OMEET this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be at Eno River State Park.
Yep, first time
so
there.
So that's the first time
it's
there.
It's just been
Another
recently
first.
Mapped by Dave Lawler.
Yep.
So we're excited and looking forward to a great day out. We may even have sunshine. Woohoo!
So let me see. Other plans. I have still a whole bunch more. Do you have some?
There is something that we talked about earlier and I can't remember, so okay.
So you
I'll
go keep
ahead.
Going.
Mm-hmm.
The transmitters.
Yep.
We've really had difficult time getting the power out that we wanted. I don't know why it's not working, but I think with the SI5351 boards arriving, I'm going to take a break from that. And then
mm-hmm.
after that, I might just make up some Oshpark boards to be made, send them to be made for just our original MicroFoxes, the Jerry Boyd, the design that's similar to Jerry Boyd's, even though they're much lower power, just so we have something.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Because that's what we used for the Avatar Club.
Right.
ARDF meet or practice or whatever. So it would give us something to actually, and then
mm-hmm.
it gives me a bit more time to make sure that the ones that are more similar to Rick Strobe's and are supposed to be more high power transmitters are good ones. But you know, if the SI5351 breakouts work fine when we make them, then I might combine that with the low power transmitters.
Right.
So that we can have several frequencies instead of just the crystal.
Mm-hmm.
The color burst crystal at the
3. I really hope that works out.
5.795 megahertz, I think. 3.58 megahertz, anyway. Something close to that. So that's definitely the direction we're going there.
Mm-hmm.
It's too bad. I really wanted to have that out, but it's taking longer than I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. I talked about the Osh Park boards coming. To stick to hardware stuff a bit more, we talked, because of all the coding the kids are going for, that we need a little hardware thing for them to fool around.
Right.
So I'm going to try to put together just a little Blinky project, or an Island CT project for the kids to work on.
Right, that's great. So
that's something super simple.
Right.
Then get back to the Island CT website and get, like I promised, some of our older blog posts and mm-hmm. older podcasts up. It should go a lot faster now. And a new site design.
Yeah. And I have a cool new thing that's coming on. So I a long time ago, like 3 years ago, I wrote a broader impact statement with Dr. Adrian Machetti
mm-hmm.
from UNC, and I'm working with this grad student. He got the grant. He applied for it twice, got it the second time, but 3 years after. And his grad student is going to be working with Avatar. She's going to meet us next weekend, or next Wednesday, at the North Carolina Science Museum in Raleigh. And she will be sharing with us some of the work she does in her studies of plankton and limiting factors of plankton in Antarctica. And then we're going to do the ocean part of the museum tour. And then we're going to follow her work in January when she takes a cruise to Antarctica and is on a research cruise. She's going to be blogging back and forth with us.
Cool.
And she's going to bring some samples back into the class when she arrives, and we're going to do some experiments on them, on limiting factors on the plankton. So very excited. And there's some cool factors going on with Clara. She is a first generation in her family to go to university. So really nice that she's the one that's going to be doing the outreach with us, because many of the students I'm working with in that group, they'll be the first generation in their families. So very excited.
I bet you wish you were going.
Oh, you bet. If they ever say, hey, by the way, we have an opening, I'll be on it. I'll be going in January.
A trip to New Zealand.
It would just be too cool to go to Antarctica. And I just think that it would be a lifer experience where, you know, you could never appreciate it until you're there and you really don't know how you'll deal until you're in the middle of it.
Yeah, yeah.
But too much fun. So that's what's coming on for the Avatar group. So excited about it. We just had Greg Meyer talking to us, or Representative Greg Meyer, North Carolina representative, talking to our Avatar group this week as we prepare for our trip to visit the state government buildings. So.
I still remember when we were at the celebration for your Keenan wrapping up, and he showed up there. And then you go up, and he's like, hey, Kelly! And you're like, buddies. I'm like, what? What? How do you know this politician?
He's
a representative in the state.
State representative.
State representative.
Yeah. He's a state Democrat. And he,
big on education.
Big on education. He also worked in my school district for years and years. And he's very passionate about equity. And I was in a few of his workshops for equity. And he's
a good speaker.
He is a very good speaker.
He really. At the Keenan thing, I'm like, ooh, he's good.
He's also set up the Blue Ribbon Mentoring program at our schools, uh-huh. Which has professionals mentor with students, and they follow students from fifth grade through high school. And it is incredible, because when these kids are connected to the right mentors,
uh-huh.
And it's a lot of people who, well, some people have kids, some people don't have kids, some people are more in the retired state who are mentors, and they are just go-getters for their kids, where they show up at parent conferences, they drive the parent to the parent conferences if the parent needs help getting there, and they're directing the child on what they, or the student on what they need to ask and how they need to advocate for themselves at the meeting. When it's done well, it is fantastic.
That sounds good.
Mm-hmm. So I think we have come to the end.
Is that it?
I think that's it.
Okay. Well, thank you for listening to the Island CT podcast.
Make sure you check out our blog.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.